any of you that would like, that are sitting in the back that would like to join us here, please do as well. Great to see all of you here. I'm Carlin DeFirth. I'm the Wadhwani Chair in U.S.-India Policy Studies here at CSIS. I'm joined by my colleague, CSIS fellow Persis Kumbhata, and our guest speaker, Mr. Arvind Goel, President and Head of Tata AutoComp Systems, who is going to speak this morning, as you all know, on the subject of India and the future of manufacturing. Delighted to have you here.
Thank you, sir.
He's just come from Detroit. Obviously, the automotive connection is there with his work with TACO and our auto industry, so a lot of fresh insights and impressions that he'll bring to the discussion this morning. Before we start, and before Persis formally introduces Mr. Goel, I'd like to set the stage for our talk this morning in two ways. First of all, to call attention to the fact that today's lecture is the final one in a series we have been doing here at CSIS and the Wadhwani Chair for more than a year on India's emerging economy. We have been looking at various sectors of India's economy and what are the challenges and opportunities they present. We have heard from Mr. Vikram Mehta, Chairman of the Shell Group of Companies, on India's energy options. We've heard from Dr. Rajiv Lal, Managing Director and CEO of India's Infrastructure Development Finance Company, on India's infrastructure needs for the 21st century. In New Delhi, we had Mr. John Flannery, the President and CEO of General Electric in India, who also spoke on the subject of infrastructure. And we have heard from Dr. Pratap Reddy, Chairman of the Apollo Group of Hospitals, on the U.S. and India and innovating in healthcare. So those have been the sectors that we have looked to date. And today, as I mentioned, we're turning our attention to India's manufacturing sector, and especially automotive manufacturing with Mr. Goel. As I list all of these speakers and the sectors, I'm reminded of that that expression, to paraphrase it, so many sectors, so little time. There are so many sectors that we would like to look at with respect to India's emerging economy. These are those that we have been able to capture so far. I'd like to actually thank the GE Foundation for sponsoring this lecture series. And quite frankly, I hope that we can continue it and expand it in the future. I should mention that Persis is in the final stages of pulling together a report on all of these five lectures, identifying the key insights and the, if you will, the takeaways, recommendations from these, and we will be releasing that report in January. So that tells you, that sets the stage for our talk today. Let me also, in the second part of scene setting, just set the stage in terms of India's manufacturing sector. I think we all know this group is well-informed. It's not a random selection of people that just happened in. They all know about India and about the manufacturing sector and have particular interests in that regard. So we are a well-informed group here. I think it's been noted that compared to other Asian economies, India's growth has not been export-led, and its manufacturing sector is typically compared unfavorably with that of some of the other regional actors. There was a chart, we talked about this upstairs, that I saw recently in The Economist on India's GDP by sector. It was very revealing in this regard. They referred to this as the missing middle chart. Missing middle meaning that India's GDP overall economy, service sector makes up just under 60%, 59% of GDP and is still growing rapidly. The agricultural sector is around 20%. And then there is the missing middle, manufacturing, making up around 15% of the economy. And that's much the same as it was, I understand, in the 1960s. So one of the questions that we'll be addressing is, where is India's manufacturing industry heading? what are the challenges and opportunities to grow this very important sector to further India's overall economic development? And within that context, we also would like to know more about the prospects for India's automotive manufacturing sector. Here, the reports are quite encouraging. I'm reading the Indian Embassy's India Review, which I trust that all of you are receiving. We have representatives from the embassy here. If you're not, I'm sure they can make sure you do. But last year in September, they did a profile of trends in society, automobiles industry poised for healthy growth, saying that India is all set to become one of the world's most attractive automotive markets for both manufacturers and consumers. The automotive industry in India currently estimated to have a turnover of $73 billion. The year accounts for 6% of the country's GDP and is expected to hit a turnover of $145 billion by 2016. So here the prospects are bright, and I think that India is also set to perhaps overtake Germany in terms of the world market. I think Germany is fourth or fifth right now, and India could be overtaking that. So there are some important parts of the whole overall question of manufacturing. So with that, let me stop here. I'd like to turn to my colleague, Persis Kumbhata, who will introduce our speaker, and then we look forward to hearing your remarks. Thanks. So again, Arvind, thank you very much for being here. Persis?
Thank you, Rick, and thank you, Arvind, for joining us as well. Mr. Goel is the president and head business group of Tata Automotive Components, known as TACO. He has previously held a number of positions within the Tata Automotive Components Group, including as the chairman of TACO Hendrickson Suspensions, chairman of Nanjing TACO, a board member for TACO Industrial Services, and as the director of Tata Toyo Radiators. Prior to joining TACO, Mr. Goel served as president and COO of Manforce Trucks. Now, TACO is part of the Tata Group's presence in the automotive industry in India. They are the second largest passenger and commercial auto manufacturers in the country and one of the largest in the world. The Indian auto market is one of the world's fastest growing, and TACO is in a unique position to service that market as well as international markets. We really could not have asked for a more experienced or knowledgeable voice on the sector. So again, welcome, Mr. Goel, and we look forward to hearing your remarks.
Thank you, President Kaur, and thank Rishi Kambata for kind introduction. And as always, the manufacturing industry people make mistakes on timings, and so I have a long presentation which I have to convert into short. But that's a hazard of people being in manufacturing industry. So good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I hope I don't give you a lot of information which you already have, but try to add something to what I wanted to cover a lot of topics, but I'll cut short because of the time constraints. Indian economy, most of you are well aware, Indian manufacturing sector, challenges in the manufacturing sector, Indian automotive sectors, and what challenges the automotive sector has, initiatives of the government in the manufacturing sector, and strategy to expand manufacturing sectors in India. You're all aware of it is expected from that the India should grow next year at a rate of 6%. This year it has come down, and there are different studies which say India will grow at 5% this year, will close by March. Indian financial year closes by March and not by December as in US. So it depends where the growth is. India really needs a growth of 7% plus to sustain its growth on a long-term basis and keep the employment rate what is required. A lot of negativism comes in the international market because the growth rate in India fell down in the last couple of quarters, and it has come down to 5.3%. But my purpose of showing this slide was that it is the geopolitical issues which we already have in sometimes, but on a long-term basis, as the fundamentals of the economy are strong, this will come back. So from the people who want to invest in India should look at a far longer term perspective rather than looking at a short term perspective here. India is only 1.7 trillion economy today, but it is going faster, and it is expected by 2022 we should be among the fourth largest economy in the world. Ambassador has already mentioned about the industry GDP and the what the service sector has. Service sector already have 55.6% in the total Indian GDP. I will not read into these slides. Just to show this on the 15 top global manufacturers by share of nominal gross value added. In 2080, China was the seventh position and has come to number two position by 2010. India from 15th position has grown to 10. Not because the growth has been extremely good, but the other countries didn't grow to the expect it should have grown. So the purpose of showing this is there is a huge scope for India to grow with the large population set and the large technical skills which the Indian people have. The top 10 global innovators for the local market, and some people were asking on the innovation, I will cover into the further slides. For the local market, the innovation for the local product, the China has been really doing extremely well, and India is far lower here. But a lot of training and activities in this line are happening in India, and we expect that this to take up further steps. If you look at the GDP growth and the manufacturing sector growth is quite linked to each other. And it is very important from the Indian long-term perspective that the manufacturing sector grows at a much higher pace, because there is a huge number of young people which are coming in, and unless the manufacturing sector grows, there can be huge social problems in the country. So there has been huge focus from the government as a manufacturing policy which has been declared, which I'll dwell upon in the coming slides. If you see from here, the manufacturing sector, the CAGR has been only 8.7% in totality, in spite of the automobile sector have a CAGR of nearly 15%. The CAGR on the automobile sector is expected to grow at a much larger pace. Maybe next year it may slightly slow down because of this year's GDP growth was not there, so the investments into the manufacturing have fallen short of. But on a long-term perspective, I think the automobile sector is doing huge investments. So the CAGR growth in the automotive sector looks to be very attractive, and this will follow in the other manufacturing industry as well due to the government policies. Contribution of manufacturing to the employment of India. This is extremely important that the manufacturing sector is critical for the economic growth, and it employs 12% of the country's labor force. And unless this grows to a level of, say, nearly 20% in the next 10 years, there will be a huge unemployment issue in the country. So there have been huge number of steps taken by the industry, by the government, so that the manufacturing industry grows, and there should not be an issue on the employment there. And so the labor intensive across manufacturing in India is a big area where the work is going on. But the key here is to develop skills. I will touch on the skill development because the ITIs which the Indian state governments have place to place and some central institutes will not be able to train number of workers required by the industry. And because a lot of workers will come from farming community shifting to the workers, because the farmers have the small villages have huge population. So the training will become the key input for the Indian manufacturing industry, and a lot of private industry participation is there. I'll show you that in the coming slides. The FDI projects in manufacturing, even though if you look at where 320 in India, but the job creation was much higher than the job creation in the FDI in service or strategic function or other functions. I've just said on the FDI, but there's also other investments on the large projects on the manufacturing. And this will be key because the ratio of the number of projects or the ratio of the investment to the job creation is highest in the manufacturing industry. Challenges which India has today, and we have still not have the final solution for it, is the high inflation rate. And the inflation is about 8 to 9%. And the industrial output is contracting after sustained monetary tightening of the higher credit costs. So the cost of capital goes up because the inflation goes up, the capital becomes more expensive because the interest rates goes up. And so it's always the industry is watching to invest at the right time when the interest rates are reasonably okay. But the larger industries, and in the House of Tatas, we have always thought of that we need to invest well in time and not wait for the time to come. You have to create your own time, and you need to do leapfrogging and not just geometric growth. I'll not touch on this. Comparison of factors affecting competitiveness in low-cost countries is design and engineering skill, manufacturing skills, manpower cost, domestic demand, commercial environment, supplier base, raw material, infrastructure. So if you look from here, the key issue comes here is the environment in the country needs to be improved, the commercial environment. And that's where a lot of work is being done. And the more competitiveness than most, India is more competitive than most of the low-cost countries except China and Czechoslovakia. India is more competitive manufacturing cost, manufacturing skill, local market size, and the established supplier base. So huge number of suppliers are available across the country. You have huge number of manpower. The issue is to training of your manpower for your specific needs. In spite of the cost of manpower going up, the labor cost in India is now touching to around $1.4 an hour as compared to China, which was lower than India in 2003 and 2004. Is now China has grown to $1.8 an hour. And we have a plant in China where we have even higher than this, especially if an international investor is investing into these countries, the workers expect larger amount of money to be paid to them. The power cost, the labor wages, the tariffs, I don't want to really go into it because of the time constraint. I just made a comparison here on the cost of power in various countries as compared to what is there in India. And if you see from this chart, the India is really at the highest level, as close to Japan and Germany. Similarly, the labor wages in India is lower than them, but it is higher than some of these countries. And import tariffs and borrowing interest costs, that is where the India is really lagging behind on the cost of capital. If you look at India, is virtually on the highest side of the borrowing interest rates. And the raw material or the auto components, we are well placed because of the raw material prices. The constraints in material flow is one of the key challenges in India, and a lot of international players from US or Europe or Japan, when they put their plants in India, the infrastructure, the roads and the coal supply chain is one of the key issues which they face. The truck movement, as I was just mentioning earlier, that truck from Bombay to Delhi needs to stop at 12 places because of the infrastructure or because of the local laws. And in the coming slides, I'll present to you that the Government of India is putting in a lot of emphasis on the Golden Quadrilateral, the Mumbai-Delhi Industrial Corridor, and also removing the local taxes so that the business becomes easier to be done. India will need about 200 to 250 million additional jobs over the next 15 years to employ the children currently in the school. The demographic dividend will come from the flow of these children into workforce. This requires an education policy consistent with the country's changing needs. I would say here there has been huge discussions with the policymakers in Delhi and the industry, and a lot of the education is now being getting structured between IITs and the skill development centers so that the skills are developed for the respective industry, and it's not a very general skill. So this is where the key is. If you have to employ so much people in the next coming years, you have to grow and you have to create skills in the country. And I think on both these places, there has been a tremendous amount of work which is happening. Land reforms is still a major issue, and I am not sure how soon it will get resolved, even though a lot of work is happening on this direction. And our own company, Tata Motors, had a very major issue by putting a plant in an economic zone in West Bengal, and where the local politicians had issues, and later on we had to shift the plant to Gujarat, which is a more friendly state. But I would say that these hiccups do certainly come in, and a lot of negative news spreads around that it is a very difficult place for doing business. Tatas have put thousands of plants all over the country, and so they had problem only in one plant, and where another few thousand plants which went smoothly, there was no news. So this news spreads, and it spreads at a very high pace, especially if it happens to a house of Tatas. But I just wanted to specifically say there are issues on the land, but things are moving in the right direction. I'll just show you. See, India today in the passenger car has about 3 million cars is what they make, and 2020 it is expected to have 10 million cars. And I am also in the executive committee of ACMA, which is the Society of Automobile Association of India. And only last month we have an executive committee meeting. And it was more of a unanimous thinking from all the people that in spite of the GDP rate coming down in last two quarters, and it not likely to grow for next couple of quarters to the extent we want it to grow, but on a long-term basis, we still want to keep the same figure. And this has been studied by consultants like McKinsey and Deloitte and others who have published papers on it. The recent paper published by A.T. Kearney also comes to the very similar figures. So this shows the quantum of growth which will happen in the car sector, on the commercial sectors, from nearly 1 million going to 2.35 million. It's not only the number which is growing here at this pace. You will look at the tonnage of the trucks, what they carry from a 9-ton trucks to a 49-ton trucks. So much larger tonnage trucks are coming into place. So the value of this commercial vehicle, if the volume is, say, going from 1 million to 2.3 million, by value terms, it is much larger which the growth is. Similarly, the tractors or the two-wheelers is likely to touch 30 million two-wheelers by 2020. And even the construction machinery, which was not made so much in India and far more imported, has suddenly started growing. And this year it is, say, 0.05 million. It is just going to go to 0.18 million. So there is a huge quantum of opportunity and possibility in the automotive industry. And automotive industry is not only the automobiles, it goes to component industry, the service industry, the dealerships. So there is a huge chain of employment which brings in. Today, it's 8% of the manufacturing industry, and it's likely to grow to almost 20% to the total manufacturing industry in India. It is also expected that India will become a major hub for the export of small cars throughout the world by 2020. The turnover expected is $115 billion, and the exports, where the ambassador also mentioned that the Indian exports is very low in the auto sector industry also. I am talking only on the auto sector, but it is expected to grow from $6.9 billion to $30 billion. But still, at $30 billion, the imports in India for the auto industry will be $35 billion. So it's still not the foreign exchange neutrality. And so there are huge opportunities for people to put plants in India, and people know what India is importing today on the high technology products, on the safety items of the vehicle, or on the fuel injection systems. So there is opportunity for the industry to put those plants, because they are already importing from various countries, and if they put plants, it will be localized and they'll certainly have a new sector of business. The mega trends in the automotive industry is on the regulation, which is coming on the emission, fuel efficiency, safety, and recyclability. We may be about 7 years behind these laws as compared to the laws in US, both on the emission and on the safety. And on the fuel efficiency, the size of the vehicles in India being much smaller, the fuel efficiency concept is very different in India as compared to the US. Then the changing customer behavior is perceived quality, which was not there in India earlier, or infotainment or functionality and frugal engineering. So all this will play a very key role in the automotive industry, and some of the people here are from Ford, and they will know much better about it, that these are the areas where the auto industries like Ford or General Motors, who are coming in India, need to play with. The Indian auto, only the component industry, I'm not talking of the vehicles now, the Indian component industry is expected to grow to $150 billion by 2020. And the exports are far more still to Western Europe from India, and the North America, it should touch around $9.5 billion. But as you see here, the green one shows that still the imports of the auto component will still be higher than the export of the auto component from India. Now, the only auto component industry contributing to GDP is 2.9%, which will go to 3.6%. And the employment in the auto component industry will create about 1.2 million additional jobs. This is all more technical, but this is all just to show that, sorry, I have not put US here, because US, from the different states, have different laws, and it's very close to the European emission laws, and India is behind by 7 years, but it is just following up. The new regulations are all in place. And there is a huge amount of investment which is happening on the oil sector, because the fuel has to meet the requirement to achieve the emission norms. The industry is ready. The government had to put money on the fuel system, the refineries, and there has been plans to put money there. Several technologies which will, and especially for the Indian vehicles, which have to be innovated, is downsized engine, advanced transmission. And you have to innovate the products for the Indian market. So the you cannot use the same large size engines which you use in US in India. So you have to downsize it, but you still need to be far more fuel efficient because the economy of the Indian is they far more, you will not have business if your vehicles are not fuel economy. So a lot of things are happening here on it, and the engine design, the turbochargers, the air cooling systems, or the intake systems are all getting modified, and a lot of innovation on this sector is happening in India. Also, the new law which is will be released in India end of this year. End of this year means in India it's in March, is on the fuel efficiency. All the policies have been agreed with the Automobile Association and Component Manufacturers Association, and there will be benefits if to the automobile companies if they achieve a better fuel efficiency. So India will be ahead with many of these countries on the fuel efficiency front because that's a very, very key driver for the Indian economy. I will leave all these technological things here, what is happening here. Even huge, a lot of US companies want to come in India because in US you have all the electronics for the vehicles, both on the safety, emission, air brakes, air conditioning. So all the electronics can be a huge, and a lot of imports are happening in this area today. And so even in US, the electronic shift in the vehicle is increasing far higher, and that's a huge business. And if the companies in the US want to come to India, India have good electronic engineering skills, but these are far more involved into the huge testing, endurance testing, and safety testings. If people in US want to come to India, I think this is a very good area where they should look at. Lightweighting is happening in India because, again, touching to the fuel efficiency, the plastics is increasing from, like US has 150 kgs per car, and India is also moving in that direction. Operational excellence is, again, a very key thing in India because today the productivity of the Indian workers is far lower than the productivity of workers in China. I have plants both in India and China, so I can tell you with my own experience. But there is a huge skills to be developed in this area on the lean supply chain and manufacturing skills. And this is where a lot of input is happening, and a lot of Indian companies have worked on it. And if you say that 21 companies in India have got Deming Award, which is the highest outside Japan actually. No other country has so many Deming Awards as compared to India, which means some of the industries have learned this skill. But this has to be learned by many people. And so the Indian Automobile Association and Confederation of Indian Industry are now developing centers all over India so that those who are members of this society can get the benefit of learning the skills. The automotive industry, the challenges are the margins are becoming lower because the price of the raw materials going up, and you really, the market is not able to afford the additional price. So you have to come out with more innovative ideas on cost reduction. What are the key challenges in the automotive servicing today is the manpower churn. So because of number of opportunities available, people are leaving from one company to the other. That's at the management level, but also at the workers level, it is becoming a major issue. So huge HR activities are required in the industry today. So to come up with this, and the larger companies have structured it, but medium and small scale industries, which is key for the India's growth, that's where this is really lagging. And so a lot of partnership is being done by the larger industries with them. The best partnerships done today in India are by Maruti Suzuki and by Tata Motors. They are helping the small-scale industries. Actually, they are posting their officers in the small-scale industries virtually on a full-time basis for a couple of years, helping them put systems in place on quality and manufacturing systems, and handholding them, the senior management there, so that they move up the supply chain. It also gives benefit to the OEMs because they get a consistent required quality as well. The up to 36% of available jobs remain vacant for want of candidates with the requisite skill. You know, one way we say that we have so much X unemployment, but the industry at large still has large number of people to be recruited. So the headhunters or the people who recruit, get people on the jobs, have a huge business in India, but it's difficult to get good skill. So a lot of work is happening on this front. And I think the greatest challenge is to train and retain these people. And a lot of these people get far more attracted towards the IT industry because of the environment. You are in an air-conditioned office, and here in the manufacturing, you have to work on the shop floor, which is because of the tropical climate, you have heat and dust. So the industry is also trying to change the atmosphere in the plants to a great extent. And I think that's a great challenge for all of us. So this is again on the manpower. I just want to give you a small example. This is the first in the auto component industry in India. This is in my own company. We have developed a skill development center, which is only about 6 months old. And with the National Council of Training and Vocational Trade with the Government of India. And as per the Tata Group policy, we take people from... India has a lot of caste system, and there are people who are generally economically backward. So as a Tata policy, we first give priority only to them. And... Actually, when the Government of India was trying to come out with a policy of recruitment on this, Mr. Tata said to the Prime Minister that we want to do much more than what you are saying, so leave it to us. We will do it much more. And so this is being monitored at the Tata Sons level, how much employment you have given to the weaker section of society. But just giving employment will serve no purpose to us unless we train them. So we are doing a skill development center, and we are training them. And Government of India is funding, actually, most of the training. So what do? We take people for 3 years training. We say that it's an earn and learn scheme. So they work 2 months in classes. Then they work 4 months on the shop floor. Then 15 days in class, again 4 months on shop floor. And so exactly what we are training, they are doing the job there, and they get a certification. And the training part of it, hardcore training of 2 months classroom or 15 days and then 15 days, like in 3 years, he will have more than 6 months classroom training and the practical training on the shop. The 6 month training is actually paid by Government of India. So after we started this, a lot of other industries have now taken initiative. Actually, how to do this itself was an issue. So Tata Group have taken lead in this respect and trying to educate a lot of industries that this is a good idea to do it, and there is a good support from government on this respect. And it is not only for us. We just give them a certificate after 3 years. We can keep them permanently if they want, but with that certificate, they can go to any industry is ready to employ them. So the national manufacturing policy is to increase the manufacturing by GDP by 25% by 2022 and contribute to the national objective by creating 100 million additional jobs and increase the level of domestic value addition and technology depth in the manufacturing. And the technology depth in the manufacturing is you have to modify the technology for the Indian market. And I remember the friend of mine who is a CEO of the Daimler India mentioning to me that they have a lot of issues on their trucks quality. And so they had a lot of German guys coming in looking at what is the issue of quality. They said, no, in Stuttgart it is fine, but the Indians don't know how to do welding. So there is a welding issue. But welding was not I won't say it was 100% as good as was Stuttgart, but it was nearly 90% plus. And they realized that the application of the vehicle was much different. So the CEO was telling me that he sent people in the market, and they found out that the vehicle was being used in a much different way than it is designed to be used. And so those cares to be taken, and not really only pushing. And so those small innovations and the small modifications on the technology are required to be done. So there is a national investment and manufacturing zones which are being created. And this will become a special purpose vehicle. And I think this will really change the bandwidth of the manufacturing sector in India. So the integrated industrial townships of at least 5,000 hectares land, state-of-the-art infrastructure, land use based on zoning, because the land, acquiring land is a major issue, and so the government is working on this. And at least 30% of the total land area will be for the manufacturing units on the industrial corridors. This I'll remove. Delhi-Mumbai corridor, you're well aware of. If you're not aware, I'll just show you from here to Delhi to Mumbai, this whole corridor, which is shown in the light brown color here. So huge activity, the whole industrial path is being created here on the corridor. 30% of the land will be used for manufacturing industry. So the government is making a structure, the private industry is participating in this structure, and the skill development centers, Gujarat is leading in this today in the skill development center, but the corridor is crossing through Rajasthan and Madhya Pradesh, which is not so developed states in India. And so huge activities are happening in those states as well. I would say India will change geometrically, not arithmetically. It's just a matter of plus minus 1 or 2 years in a 10 to 15 year horizon. And so it is as a Tata Group policy, and that's what I would say, that we need to invest ahead of the curve. So sizing the future by leapfrogging is what I would like to say. India will change geometrically and not arithmetically. That's what my firm view is. And if you see in China, the China grew last 10 years, the growth in China has been extremely high. As soon as they crossed the per capita income of $2,400. India, the per capita income is at, that's a threshold for a very major growth. India is at $1,500. As soon as we touch that as a per capita income, you can see the growth will be really in a geometrical progression. What got you here will not got you there. Look at leapfrogging opportunities is what I would like to say. Technology adoption more important than quick returns. I just say that Dreamliner is a revolutionary product that had its shares of struggle. 3-4 years it was behind schedule, but it is an outstanding product. Doing and learning more important than knowledge acquisition. Mr. Tata had a dream actually of this car to be made in plastics. And some of things were made in plastics, but was not fully successful, not from the safety point of view, but from the cost point of view, we found that the steel doors and the steel body was cheaper. Not that we have dropped this project of plastic body, we are still working on it. And that's why we say you have to really innovate from the Indian market point of view. Imagining the future is more important than forecasting it. I purposely said that, and uncertainties in the normal state of the nature. I would leave that efficiency versus effectiveness. You work on things you don't quite understand. You find it difficult to plan the way and forward and unclear. So I would say that if you look at fly, cannot fly in a straight line. If you look at, only the human beings look at the straight line. Most of the animals, the birds, and the insects, they look in a circle. And they go in a spiral. And they have huge number of, like a fly has almost 1,000 cells in his eye, in a small eye. We have only one. So you have to look in all the directions. And so there you have to navigate in uncertainties in India. Because only by reading news of the Indian newspapers, you may think that India is not doing well, it's not a place to invest. because we look in a straight line method. To do business in India, you have to look in a more spherical method, into more in totality of the things, and not just from the news point of view. Nature's example, how snail keeps alert and presence in the carfish. Not like to really go into because the time is running out. I would say use compass and not maps. That's what I would like to tell a lot of people here, because we like to look at the maps and look at the straight line, how to go from here. Please look at the compass and look at the direction in which the Indian economy will certainly grow. Someone had asked me on the innovation, so I think, Kapil, you were asking on the innovation, and I had made one slide here on the, you know, you are inspired and then you develop and then you commercialize the innovation. The traditional innovation was, it was happening in the advanced countries. All the three steps were happening in the advanced countries, and later on it used to be commercialized and used also in the emerging economy. The new thing which is happening is, it is inspired in the advanced countries and in the emerging countries together, and developed jointly together. A lot of companies who are doing the joint development on innovation are really being far more successful, and that's what the theme of the innovation is. And innovation would not only be on the product, but on the process or the systems or all over the place. I'd like to conclude by saying it is extremely important for anyone to come to India to localize things there and not depend on imports because of the rupee volatility, and you have to really spend a lot of time in training and learning and doing experience on the quality, and leapfrogging will definitely happen. In India, laws and regulations are actually abided by the OEMs, so if there is a new emission law or new safety law, at least all the OEMs abide by the law. So there is a huge opportunity in all these places. In spite of the hurdles of the land, the government is working on it, and I am quite positive it takes more time than what we think it should take, but things are moving in the right direction. Skill development I've already touched. That's all. I thought I'll maybe better to answer question answers than really running through the presentation. Thank you very much.
Mr. Gold, that was a great presentation.
Thank you, sir.
I sincerely mean that. The slides that you presented contain so much information, insight. Indeed, at the end, it was almost wisdom and spirituality. I mean, it was a really, really good presentation. And oddly enough, as you were trying to move forward with this, and several of those that you skipped, I almost grabbed you and say, I want to see that one. There was one on the public survey that you were showing, and then several on laws and regulations, which I'm sure many people here would like to have. So I would like to ask if it would be possible, I don't know if this is proprietary or not, but I'd like to be able to put your entire presentation, your slides, on our website.
So
that all of you will have access to those slides. And can spend even your spare time looking at the full presentation, because that was really...
That
was super. That was absolutely super. So with that, we do have 30-plus minutes for questions, comments. While you're collecting your thoughts, I'd like to ask Persis perhaps to pose a first question to get our discussion period started. But again, thank you. That was a great presentation.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Rick. In the course of doing this entire series, we've drawn out a few themes that are present in each sector, more as irritants, I would say, than as opportunities. And one of those is a chronic energy shortage in India. It affects everybody's operations. Now, automotive manufacturing has quite a... high growth trajectory. How do chronic energy shortages impact your operations, and how do you address them? It could be, an overview of how you do that, or is it simply access to, states that have a better energy policy? Some states have better energy policy. Some states have you know, less of a better policy. How do you operate, you know, within this difficult shortage?
See, certainly power is a very key. It's like a, I would say, raw material for a manufacturing industry. And India certainly has a lot of power shortage, and especially in certain states, it's far more as compared to states like Gujarat. They don't have power shortage. But if you go to the southern part of India, Tamil Nadu, you hardly get power for 10% of your time. There have been far more political issues on the power front than the real investments, because there are international companies who are ready to invest into power. There are Indian industry like Tata Power has been investing large plants of power. Because of the political problems or the corruptions involved into the whole system, a lot of people have been not putting power plants. But there is a huge pressure from the industry. And now the states are able to feel that people are not coming to put manufacturing plants in their state because there is no power. So that is impacting the state as well. And so investments will happen in the power sector. And today, many manufacturing companies produce their own power. They have their own gen sets, and larger companies like Maruti Suzuki have their own power plant itself, like turbine powers, and they give to all their ancillaries within the 25 kilometers radius. So people are investing on the power on their own too, but it's very expensive to run gensets because you have to run on diesel, because plants are not so large to have full-fledged turbines and all. And the state government in Haryana allowed Maruti Suzuki to sell power. Otherwise, in India, you cannot sell power other than selling to the state. And if you sell to state, you don't know again whether it will go back to the manufacturing industry. So the laws are getting changed, and there is a lot of pressure in the state government, I would say. And because of the shortage of power, the cost of power is also going up. So it also has issues on your cost structure. And you also have a quality of power. You know, a lot of people in US would not even know the term quality of power, because you have, if you don't have a good quality of power, the lot of electronic machineries which you have computerized control machinery, there are chips into it, and if the power, the voltages are fluctuating to a great extent, you can damage your products. So that the product should not damage, you put additional devices to safety. So there's a huge cost to it. So I think power is a very important point, which Percy has said, and I hope in the coming years it will be solved. And there have been a national power plants which are coming in, but a lot of states have to work on it.
All right, questions, please. If you could identify yourself.
Sure.
And your affiliation.
I'm Sriram Iyer. I'm a great admirer of the Tata Group. And the problem in India doesn't seem to be with the companies in the private sector. They always perform extremely well, and Tata has done so well for 60, 70 years. It's well known. And they're respected, not only in India, but especially like with the Jaguar in the UK, etc., Land Rover Jag. The issue really in India still seems to be the tremendous unpredictability, lack of predictability, but the speed of reform, policy reform, land acquisition, infrastructure. When I say infrastructure, power, roads, ports, quality, the reliability. And then there's the fiscal deficit, which has been going on and on forever, keeping inflation rates high and raising the cost of capital. And then there are also labor laws, which are very restrictive. You touched on one good thing, which I was going to mention, education levels being so low for basic education. And what you've said, learning by doing, training by employers, is for the specific skills that employers need, is probably a great route. And it's been tried in Chile since the late 1980s and worked with government subsidy, paid to the employers so they can train people for what they want them to do now. But having said all this, if you look at Ratan Tata's interview, and he's a man, again, who is much admired, 2 days ago in the Financial Times, even he said Tata's will probably expand more abroad than in India because of all the, you said irritants, I call them impediments. Impediments to growth are not from the private sector. How can you put more pressure, not just on the central government, the central government controls the fiscal deficit, but state governments, because of land acquisition, is a pain. I was in India in February for an exercise, and this land acquisition issue, which is fraught with local politics and corrupt gangs, it's a big issue. I'm sorry to make the glass half empty. You were painting the half full, but no, I didn't mean. That's why I said Tata's is great.
See, your point is right, and that's why I said that you need to work in uncertainties. See, if one way is that there is no two point that India should modify the labor laws, India should modify the land acquisition laws and do more on the infrastructure. That's how the further industry can grow at a much higher pace than what is being even projected at. The point what I was trying to make that the industry is pushing the government. And fortunately, some of the industry people are joining government, like from Infosys joined the government of India. The ex-Tata employee joined the planning commission. So people are joining government, leaving very lucrative jobs or very senior things. Not that by they joining that things would move suddenly. What I'm trying to say is there are uncertainties, there are challenges in India, but there are huge opportunities in India as well. And in spite of these problems in India, India will leapfrog. So how to navigate into it is what I was trying to say. Certainly the land is a very, very major issue in India. Land and power and infrastructure, these are very three critical issues. And land in certain states is very critical to even talk about it. Tata's have the dream project of Mr. Tata, the nano project, had a major setback because of the land. Even the government has given the land and that also was taken back. So land is a major issue. Power is the next and the infrastructure. But I would say step by step, it is happening. It is moving in the right direction. Problem is the speed. You have to work. We all want to drive the car at 100 miles an hour and the car is running at 12 miles an hour. There is a gap. How to move that gap and how to move that needle is what the policy makers have to work on it. And that's what the industry is putting their back into it. The policy makers are doing. It is the socio-political environment has to be right to do a lot of the steps.
Yes, please.
Recent Planning Commission figures. Sorry, Sasha Reiser-Kozitsky, Eurasia Group. Recent Planning Commission figures highlighted in Mint show that during India's high growth period between 2005 and 2010, you saw an employment elasticity of almost zero. What can change in the future? What do you expect to realistically change in the future to see India's high rates of economic growth translate into real employment growth on the ground? Because as you mentioned before, without that, there is every expectation the country could implode.
The service sector in India grew at a larger pace, and the service sector is now almost 56% of the Indian GDP. Next growth was little on the agriculture sector, but the manufacturing sector per se has not grown. And you need large number of people only in manufacturing sector. The service sector employs people because large number of education institutions came into India. People are doing engineering or doing physics, chemistry, and graduating. They are able to get employment in service sector. But the hardcore labor, the large number of workforce coming from the rural industry, India, you need to employ them in manufacturing sector. So that's where the growth has not happened, and that's where the whole policy of 2022 of the Government of India is towards the manufacturing industry. How fast it can grow, whether it will grow as per the policy which has been defined, is what has to be seen. But a lot of activities are happening in that direction. Without manufacturing sector growing at this pace and Indian economy growing at 7% plus, you'll have a lot of issues in the country.
Questions? Please.
Julie Kalishman, Export Import Bank. With the demand for cars expected to increase by so much before 2020, do you expect the government to look at lowering tariffs for imports, or is it still going to be probably driven by domestic production?
No, I don't expect the tariffs to be lowered further. It will be going driven by the domestic production, is what I would say.
Okay. We were talking earlier about the differences of the various states in India, and Gujarat came up as being quite welcoming and receptive and facilitating of manufacturing and the rest. Could you talk about that subject of those progressive states within India? I know that the U.S. State Department, Ambassador Nancy Powell, has been traveling to the various states, saying that the United States wants to work more directly with the progressive Indian states. You've got trade delegations that have been coming. Actually, our two neighbors here in Maryland, the governor there, as well as the governor of Virginia, have gone over to India for the purpose of looking at state opportunities. Could you talk about that for a moment?
Yeah, certainly. Some states in the country, especially Gujarat, and to some extent Madhya Pradesh and Bihar in India, have changed because of the leadership. So if the leadership is taking accountability of all his deputies and all the districts in his state and has a far more single point agenda of growing his state, then these states are growing faster. Like Gujarat, where Ford is putting a plant, Maruti is also, Suzuki is also putting a plant now, Tata's put the plant for Nano. And experience of all this industry is there, that's been a huge support from the government, not only on the land, but the creating the infrastructure for running your factories there, whether it is roads, whether it is power, whether it is for effluent treatment and the hazard good disposals and things like that, which are all highly controlled by the government. So all these areas, there has been a huge support from these states. Why it is not happening in the other states is question of how strong the politics is there, whether it's a clear majority in the state or there's a coalition government in the state, and how strong the leaders are. But these three states which are growing, and other states are observing them, and I would say it is being looked at the national level with people, and they say if these can do, why not the others? So I think it will happen. It's a point when there is a change, and then things should happen in this direction. But also their leaders should have a very clear clarity on what they want to do. So in India, it's not important that you should be educated. You have never gone to school, you can become a leader. It's not like many parts of the world, and even in China, you cannot become unless you are well educated. So it depends upon how the leadership is evolving in the states. And still, a lot of places the leaders in India are very old, and the youngsters are not coming into the system. So very difficult for me to answer which states, how will they improve, when they will improve. But there are examples for the other states to look at. Because They also know that the highly educated people from that state are not traveling to the other state to do employment because they are losing their skill. So those people have to invest back into the system. I would say invest back into the leadership. Everything else would fall in place.
Thanks for the great presentation. I want to switch a little bit.
You need to introduce yourself to others here.
Cap Sharma with the Tata Group. Who is competing for India's attention on the ground in India? You're a manufacturer in India. And for the longest time, the United States was the manufacturing leader and would spend a lot of time investing in India. But other countries and other regions have caught up to the United States, I think, in terms of getting India's attention. So who is it that on the ground are Indian manufacturers looking to partner with? They look at a country or a region and saying, wow, we need to partner with them. If it's not the United States, then who is it, and what does the United States need to do to catch up to some of these other countries, whether it's Germany, whether it's Australia, Southeast Asia? And if it is the United States that's number one, what do we have to be careful about that our competitors or other regions of the world are nipping at the heels of the United States and would eventually overtake the United States in terms of manufacturing partnerships and JVs?
The sectors, I can only talk about the automobile sector per se. And one thing is the automotive technology in the world is far more driven by Germany still, other than the recently on the electric cars or the electronics in the vehicle, which is far more being driven in the US. But historically, the automotive engineering, the hardcore technology got developed in Europe. And the Japanese industries made it much lighter, much cheaper. And so a lot of Japanese industry came in India because Indians need a cost-effective solution. And the technology came from Europe. In the automotive sector, the Europeans were much larger size of vehicle, much heavier vehicle, consuming much larger fuel. So they took a step back in the Indian automotive industry. Whether it is General Motors or Ford or Chrysler, they were not there. They are there now, but not in the large numbers. Similarly, because they were not there, the ancillaries from this country didn't go there because you generally go with the parent going there. But both Ford and General Motors, I have now made smaller vehicles for the Indian market. Ford came out with Figo, which was a good success in India. And they are coming out with another small vehicle, which they will launch in India, Brazil, and China, and where 60% of the volumes will be in India, the Ford's new plant in Sanand. Similarly, General Motors is working on a smaller size vehicles. To be in the automotive industry in India, you need to be fuel efficient, you need to be cost effective. Yeah, there is an upper-end market of the Indian vehicles as well for Land Rover, Jaguar, Mercedes, or BMW. But those vehicles are bought more on a brand image than the vehicle, whether the vehicle is really good or bad. So the General Motors or Ford or Chrysler do not have that upmarket brand image what Land Rover, Jaguar, or BMW, or Mercedes, or Lexus have for a particular range of vehicles, which are not large volume in India. Not like China. India is a smaller market there. But those vehicles are bought by the Indians, whatever the price is. They are ready to pay the custom duty and buy those vehicles. Well, that's a brand image. But the mass market, whether it's a commercial vehicle or a utility vehicle or the passenger car vehicles, you need to be far more fuel efficient and lightweight. And it needs to be redesigned for the Indian condition. And I think General Motors and Ford have started working on it.
Could you give us a nano update that captured the imagination of I think the world when it was first launched? Where give us an update on nano.
I think nano was one of the personal and a dream project of the chairman of Tata Group, Mr. Tata. And I would personally say it's an outstanding vehicle, not because it is made by House of Tatas and I am employed by House of Tatas, but as an automotive engineer, I would say. It had its own fall down because it was to start in West Bengal, and because of the political problems, they had to shift that plant, and shifting an automotive plant is not easy because the paint shop itself takes 18 months to commission. So what happened, the vehicles was shown in the exhibition, vehicles were given to the dealers, vehicles were made, few hundred vehicles, and then you are not able to launch. So that gave a big setback to the Nano per se. And by the time the other automotive industry, they understood how the engineering was done, they brought smaller vehicles like Figos and Beat from General Motors, and they were also there in the market, not to this price point. And so also it always started that this is a cheap vehicle. So Indians by nature do not like to, they want to show that even if it's a cheap product, they don't want to show it's cheap. Mm-hmm. So it's a psychological issue. I'm buying a car, and how can you say I'm buying a cheap car? So you have to say it's a value for money. I think it's also some marketing errors to some extent. Yeah. And I would say it's an outstanding vehicle, and the volumes are not where Tata would have expected it to be. It's touching around 6,000 per month. The plants are designed to produce 20,000 per month. So a lot of modifications are being done. For example, the lowest point of Nano, the lowest car, what we thought is for the mass market, is not actually never sold, because the lowest car is without air conditioning and without power windows. But everybody wants air conditioning and power windows at that point also. So the only up end of the Nano is getting sold. Now they want power steering. So the vehicle was not designed for many of these things. It is being designed now. And there will be a Nano diesel with power steering. So another 8-9 months, a lot of things will get launched. And also a lot of work is being done on Nano, even for exports. So I think they lost some time because of the government problems, but they're working on it. And I would still say that it was an outstanding project. And lot of companies in India, even though Tata has never made money, but I would say lot of companies in India started design houses, because internationally people started looking India as a good design base. So a lot of independent companies, including some of the Tata companies, are exporting designs, and they are making good money, because people recognize internationally that India is a good design base. So I think a huge benefit as a nation we have got. Now, Tata have to get benefit out of Nano, which should happen.
Why don't you just call it Nano Jaguar? We'll get everybody.
Yeah.
We'll line up. Just a
maybe.
Please.
Good idea. I'm Steve Engelken. I just retired from the State Department a couple of months ago, where I was working on your neighbor, Pakistan, which has all the same problems. They all sound the same. They're just worse. But the one bright spot has been the economic negotiations between Pakistan and India. If politicians would stand out of the way, a big F, are there export opportunities for the manufacturing sector in Pakistan, or import from Pakistan to India?
I think so. There is a huge opportunity for direct trade.
Whether it is...
And this is specifically in the automotive sector?
In the automotive sector, well, it is possible in the automotive sector, medical sector, foods, grains. And I think there is a huge opportunity for both these countries. And how soon it can start is a big question mark. And see, the people who have seen the war, are very less people are remaining. So I would say in another 20 years, you will not find them. So everybody is born post-independence. So I think it takes generations to change this, the mindset to it. But there is a huge opportunity. I would say it is good for both the countries.
Does TACO do any business with Pakistan?
No.
Are there opportunities that you could
envision there? There are opportunities. Certainly there are opportunities. But there are plants of, like Suzuki have a plant, or the Ford have plants, and then we can certainly supply to them. Great ancillaries for them. maybe create joint ventures with the local partners in Pakistan. I think opportunities are there. Because one thing, there is a, you don't have to go by sea, you can go by road. And so the transportation and logistic costs are much lower. And the products what you want to develop in India is similar, so you don't have to do renovation for the local market in Pakistan. It's very close to what the requirements are.
It's a good question. It's actually one that is getting a lot of attention now, the India-Pakistan Trade Initiative. And just yesterday, the National Intelligence Council issued its 2030 report, and it had in it a what they called a turn-the-corner scenario for South Asia, which would consist of the India-Pakistan Trade Initiative taking off, which would combine with helping to move the Pakistani economy forward, and that could turn the corner of years of hostility and acrimony. So that's a again,
yeah,
the automotive industry will have to lead the way. We can get a Nobel Peace Prize out of it. So other questions? We've got about just a little bit less than Rick.
Yeah. Mr. Goyle, Rick Rosso with McLarty Associates. Looking at your other larger neighbor, China.
Yeah.
Last year, a former head of FICCI came to a room about this size and said it was the advent of neocolonialism, the trade relationship and how one-sided it's become. As a manufacturer, your sector, and even more broadly, how do you view that relationship? I mean, are there major concerns? Is it? I mean, you just put a plant there, so obviously, you know, you're embracing the opportunities there. But looking at some of your colleagues in the industry and in other manufacturing industries, how do you kind of see that? Is that an area where there needs to be additional support to industry, some concerns about the flow of trade, or you know, do you expect that as time goes on, you will continue and become, you know, a larger trading partner, more exports to China? How do you kind of view the China relationship?
See, basically, to India to be competitive with China in the trade on the manufacturing side is still a long time to go. Even though the cost of labor in China has now taken over the cost of labor in India, but the productivity in China is 50% better than productivity in most of the Indian industry. So that cost, higher cost, does not really matter in real terms in totality of the cost. And the Indian labor laws also need to have a very major reforms. And overall, the total size and the capacity and the volumes of the plants in China are far, far huge. So there is a cost of production certainly comes down. Like, for example, in India, if you have to sack a worker from a plant who is not working, and he's a, you know, it takes years and years because you have to file cases, there are inquiries, and you may be successful, you never know. In China, it's not an issue. You can just sack them, and there is a law how much you need to pay. If he has worked for 5 years, you pay him 5 months' salary, and you can say thank you very much. So because of these labor laws, also the productivity doesn't improve. So it's a chicken and an egg situation. So, and not much has happened in this direction in the country because of the political atmosphere. But on the new industrial corridors which are being created, where the manufacturing policies are being put, there they have a separate labor law only for that corridor. Because there's a manufacturing hub, and you have to do a lot of exports, so you get incentives, and so you have all these things. How successful, whether tomorrow the politicians may change back, is always an issue. But India is really not today competitive in manufacturing as compared to China. Long way to go.
Yes.
My name is Jenny McCarter. I'm with the U.S. Department of Labor Office of International Relations. So the U.S. Department of Labor currently has a memorandum of understanding with India's Ministry of Labor and Employment. And one of our focus areas is kind of the worker skill development and training that you've been talking about. And so you mentioned restructuring public education and also the types of training programs that you're doing within your own company. But can you expand on these ideas and talk about maybe some of the next steps to make these types of programs more scalable to meet the growing, well, the current and growing need for employment?
See, on the skill development, which the initiative we have started, and I think a lot of industries would do in time to come now, is what you do, you first map the complete operation of your plant. Just for an example, if you are making engines for automobiles, so you map the whole engine manufacturing. And you decide that on this engine manufacturing, what skills are required to be developed. And you really write down a full book on the skills and the development process. And what we have done is, in some of our plants, we have done this in far more details. And then what we did is we also selected some of the workers over the period of time who were just outstanding and who know this much better than many of the officers would know. We have taught them how to become teachers for these workers. It's much easier for them to communicate with them in their particular type of a language, what they understand much better. So creating teachers out of good workers or the lower management who are able to teach them is very important. And how much focus the top management of the company gives for such training. Otherwise, these trainings would die their own death. So it's important that the top management is focused, they interact with them, they interact with the workers, and the programs are well designed. And then this becomes successful. Just to give you an example on this skill development, what we did for the workers, and who have completed 6 months, the lot of even the diploma holder engineers who were recruited fresh from the college, we realized that these workers whom we have trained for 6 months have better knowledge than the diploma holder engineers we have recruited, because in the college they have never learned more practicality of the things. So now there is a new challenge for making training courses for diploma holder engineers or engineering graduates as well, which also we are trying to do in addition to the workers.
Any final questions that anyone has? Okay. Well, we're running right on time, so I think that we will conclude with the most important thing, which is to thank our guest for being here.
Thanks.
Arvind, this has been a great presentation, and we have a small measure of our appreciation.
Thank you.
It's a little heavier than I thought. I hope you don't have to pay excess weight for your luggage.
Manufacturing industry people need heavier things.
But we really do greatly appreciate this. This has been a great conclusion to our series on looking at the emerging India economy and the future of manufacturing, which we ask you to speak to. You covered that from 30,000 feet down to ground level. A great presentation. I really liked your slides. And I liked the wisdom. I liked what you said that we need, with respect to India, to look at the compass, not the map. Yeah. The compass is pointing, and I think, in the right direction. Yeah. And I think that you have reinforced that. So let me do two things. First, let's express appreciation to we will stay in touch there. Now, just before you leave, let me call attention to coming attractions. If you are available tomorrow, and you can be on Capitol Hill at 10:30, Senator Mark Warner will be welcoming us there for a CSIS event, which will be unveiling this report, which is just off the press, Bit and Beyond, written by visiting fellow Matthew Stokes, Advancing the U.S.-India Economic Relationship. The BIT is something that we've been talking about here in a number of occasions. This is the report that will explain why that's important, but more importantly, what comes next in terms of the U.S.-India economic relationship. And in that regard, I think one of the handouts that you had when you came in was our U.S.-India Insight for the month of November, Reigniting the U.S.-India Economic Relationship, a new framework. We're proposing that if those of you here, some of you know that there was a new framework agreement on defense cooperation that was signed with India in 2005, a 10-year framework. We are suggesting that we look at a 10-year framework for economic cooperation, hence a new framework.
That will include a bit, but also specific work in various sectors of India, sectoral agreements, look at the whole question of visas, the whole question of the STEM visa and the rest, which is now getting attention, and looking down the road, perhaps as the Holy Grail, but I think it's actually more achievable than that, of a free trade agreement. But so much of this is caught up in where these sectors go, including manufacturing. So do take a look at this. I hope you can join us for tomorrow's session on Capitol Hill or others that we'll have. But again, Arvind, thank you very much for your time. Thank you all.
Safe trip home. Right. Hope to see you. Right.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
I don't know if you've had a chance to read
that. I did.
But we'd love to get your thoughts on that.
I'll.